Welcome to Midnight Caller, Neil Atkinson with Rory Smith. Midnight Caller being one of these great examples of Anfield rap titles or working titles that entertain us, that make literally no sense to the listener. This is a reference to a TV show that was starring Gary Cole, the American actor, back in the 1980s. We wonder at times why we struggle to market this stuff. But anyway, it's Rory Smith from the New York Times. I'm Neil Atkinson, and we're here to talk about the market and where it currently lives and what it's up to in a transfer sense. And in lots of ways, Rory, sort of looking at where things have been a little bit slow and a little bit stagnant, and sometimes you can call that sort of thing a little bit too early, it's worth saying that in transfer market terms. But I think one of the issues that we've got is that a lot of the traditional pressure valves that manage to get money moving, get things started, are just sort of not fit for purpose. The Italian champions, Inter, are in trouble. A situation where Juventus are trying to slash wage bills. Bayern Munich have said they're not doing anything at this stage. You've got the issues in Spain, especially with Real Madrid and Barcelona, and the French market is in a terrible state. We'll come back to England in a minute or two, but what that sort of means, I think, is that everyone's just sort of lost the things that catalyse a transfer market.
Yeah, there's kind of two ways it starts, I think. The first is that you get someone does something big early that can kind of bring things, get things moving effectively. So you get a kind of, I guess this, some of the example would be Sancho. So Man United signed Sancho, which means Dortmund go and sign Daniel Marlon from PSV and, you know, Florian Neuhaus or whatever from Mönchengladbach, at which point Gladbach then spend 10 or 15 million quid on a couple of players to replace him, and those clubs then feel as though they can go and sign a couple of players for, I don't know, 5 million or whatever to replace whoever they've lost at Gladbach. And that gives everybody a kind of degree of confidence that money is moving around, that they have to kind of pull their fingers out a little bit and they can start spending. Because the problem at the start of every summer, I guess, is that nobody wants to buy before they sell. Because if you buy before you sell, you can be lumbered with players that you don't need and an inflated wage bill. But no one wants to sell before they buy, because you might not get the player you want, and also there might be a perception that you're desperate for money, so you can go and sign somebody, which means you get lowballed and you lose money and blah blah blah. So there's this whole kind of balancing act, and you tend to need someone to move first to break it. And the other way that money starts circulating in the transfer market, I think, is with lots of little deals. You get lots of kind of 6-7 million quid deals here or there, and the smaller clubs sort of start doing their business, at which point they then become more amenable maybe to selling their more high profile players, which means you then get everybody starting to circle those, you know, those mid-table stars, I guess, the players from Palace or Southampton or Leicester or wherever, a bit harsh on Leicester, those sorts of clubs where, hang on, I've paused my brain, those sorts of clubs where they don't want to lose them without having replacements lined up, but then as soon as the replacements start coming in, everything starts moving, everyone feels a bit more confident that there is liquidity in the market. And the impression that I get so far is that neither of those things have really happened. That might change a little bit when Sancho goes through. You might then see Dortmund go and do a couple. There might be another big one coming from elsewhere. But as you say, the problem is the number of teams who can do something big is really small. And at the same time, all of the smaller clubs, the teams who wouldn't do anything massive to kickstart the market, are even more, not penny pinching, they're even more cautious than normal, because their sense is that they have lost a lot of money. They can't afford to find themselves lumbered with players that, having to pay, you know, to pay two or three players in the same position. They don't want to sign anybody who might not get into the team. They don't want to find themselves in a position where they have bought too early, which means that the big teams who would normally come and take their players off their hands, sort of semi-unwillingly, that they feel, well, look, you've signed this right winger, so you're going to play him, which means you might accept 10 million quid less on the right winger who we want and you know we want. So everything still is in this kind of holding pattern, because no one really has the, almost, I guess, the financial confidence to move first.
I'm always intrigued to see who does do what and how independently they sort of act. So for me right now, this window, I think Arsenal are really interesting, in that it feels like Arsenal have got a defined plan and they're making rational decisions and doing them in a calm sort of this is what we're about way. Knowing that, in a sense, it's quite easy to be Arsenal. They're a big club in terms of the history, in terms of the size of the stadium, in terms of the size of the wage bill. But at the minute, they can't go to the big club shops. So what that means is it feels as though Arsenal know that they are, in a sense, the biggest and most powerful spenders, at least in the Premier League, in the smaller places. And for instance, we've seen Liverpool do that very successfully in the past. I think that that's something that can suit a certain club at a certain time, because what it means is you almost haven't got to worry about ramifications, knock-on effects. The idea that you've got to get your outsourced before you can do your ins is less of a problem, because the money's less upfront. You've got more elasticity within the wage bill. And I think it's really interesting that, for instance, and also the other thing is they've got a settled manager, which is the other thing that sort of hit the Premier League as well, in that Tottenham, who could be in a similar position to Arsenal, have not done a thing, because they've got loads of stuff hanging over on the outs, specifically Kane, but not only Kane, specifically Kane. And then on top of that, they haven't had a manager for a long period of time, and they feel as though they still want to punch their weight in a certain way. So they're unable to, they're almost, as ever, the North London clubs are a really interesting contrast, where Arsenal can just be exactly and do exactly what they want through the market off a long-term plan, and Tottenham are in a situation where they're completely frozen.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by Arsenal. Does the Ben White deal in particular, that is big money. That is big money for a team that has been hit hard by the pandemic. We've seen basically the market function as we thought it would. The pandemic market function as kind of the predictions have been for the last year, which is that, right, City haven't done Grealish and Kane yet, but that's where they're looking. They're thinking, right, we want to go and spend 170, 200 million quid on two players, which is something that City haven't really done before. Mm. To do that, they're going to have to shift one, two, three players out of their squad, not because they need the money. Obviously, it's Man City, they don't need the money, but because there is one limiting factor on Manchester City acquiring a squad of 25 superstars, and that's that people want to play football. You can't have a squad in which Jack Grealish is your 75, 80 million pound signing, but that means that Bernardo Silva and Raheem Sterling and whoever else are sitting on the bench. You have to let one or two go just to create the kind of space in the squad so that you don't have to deal with kind of unsettled players. But City need to work out who's going to go. You know, could be Mahrez, could be Bernardo, could be Sterling. I suspect after his Euros it won't be. Could be Gabriel Jesus. I think they would like to free a couple of those just so they don't have this kind of huge weight of players in their squad. We've seen PSG do one massive one in the world's finest footballer, Achraf Hakimi, and then they signed Donnarumma and Wijnaldum and Sergio Ramos, all on, in inverted commas, free transfers. There's a massive financial outlay there.
What's interesting about them, though, Rory, is that that's dead money. To go back to the earlier point, in that Inter need to pay off the debts.
Yeah.
So that's not going back into anything at all in real terms. And the other three, which are massive outlays, but they are all, as you say, they are all free transfers. So it's all going to wages into the players. And this is where I think City are interested in that they're doing what they've not done before. And they're targeting a very upwardly mobile club's talisman in Grealish, and they're targeting a very difficult to pin down Daniel Levy with the biggest asset he's ever had in Kane, and that is a remarkably difficult process to go through. And the flip side is Paris Saint-Germain have also got money. They've given 50 million of it to Inter Milan, which is going straight in towards paying Inter Milan's debts, and none of that's going anywhere else either.
Yeah, and so you do have this contrast, but they are the two liquid clubs, and I suspect you could throw Chelsea into that as well, although Chelsea's limiting factor is almost that they've got a relatively, it turns out, settled squad, one good enough to win the Champions League, which makes rebuilding quite a lot harder. So, Chelsea fans, I think, are desperate for a striker, and they've been linked with Erling Haaland. But that does, signing Erling Haaland does, to an extent, mean writing off Timo Werner, and I don't think Chelsea want to do that. Regardless of what his performances were like last year, he was a major outlay, and Chelsea will not be ready to think, right, well, we can just get rid of this, not get rid of him, but kind of assume that 53 million quid was money badly spent and we have to move on from it. That is not what they will want to do. But aside from those three, and you're right that Chelsea haven't done anything yet because of the way their squad is balanced. They sold Giroud to AC Milan for a couple of million quid, which might create a bit of space, I guess. City are doing two very difficult deals that are partly dependent on shifting players out as well, and they won't want to be lowballed. City might have all the money, might be richer than God, but they don't want to be lowballed on Gabriel Jesus and Riyad Mahrez. They'll want to get as much back in for them as they can, so they're trying to run those processes simultaneously. And as you say, PSG's outlay has been big, particularly in terms of wages, but that money will not be reinvested back in the market because Inter, as you say quite rightly, need the money for other things. So none of that has as yet kick-started the market, which means that Arsenal, who have been hit by the pandemic, are in one sense in a strong position. They've been able to go to Brighton and say, right, we'll pay you 50 million quid for Ben White, which could then kickstart what Brighton do in the transfer market. That, although they are, Brighton are a strange case because they do think so long term. It may well be that they can look around and think, right, we know exactly who we're going to get to replace Ben White anyway. We're going to do this, this and this, and actually that we'll get 50 million quid in, but we might only spend 10 of it. That would be a Brighton play, I think. The thing with Arsenal that makes them unusual is that they have been hit by the pandemic, and I think they do need to cut their wage bill. I think they've got a lot of high earners. They may have made the decision that if White is the player they want, then they just have to go and get him at any point. That is how much they will have to pay for him, whether it's now or in a month's time. And you might pay a little bit more now than you would in a month's time, but it's worth spending that extra couple of million quid, losing that leverage in the negotiation, because you can get him in for pre-season, you can start building the team around him. But I do think Arsenal will find that later in the summer they'll have difficulty shifting the players they need to shift, because there are not many teams who can pay the wages of even someone like Hector Bellerin, who was being looked at by PSG but presumably will not sign for PSG because they've signed Achraf Hakimi. So Arsenal, I think, are still in a relatively difficult position, in the sense that they've made a decision that they're going to go and sign Ben White and the lad from Anderlecht, who I think has been, that deal's been completed now.
Yeah, Lokonga.
Lokonga, that's 12.
Tavares as well at left back.
Yeah, that, and they're both back. You know, Lokonga and Tavares are both ones of the future. They're young-ish. They aren't massive outlays by modern standards. They're doing their spending first, and that may, in a sense, I suppose, I'm thinking off the top of my head now, but I wonder if that, to an extent, is an expression of weakness, that Arsenal are in the position where they just have to pay asking prices, so they're not going to be able to haggle to get players in. Because if you haggle with Brighton for too long over Ben White, maybe somebody who's a bit more attractive than Arsenal comes in for Ben White. That's the problem. And again, there is an advantage for Arsenal for being active in what is currently still a passive market, but there will be a price to pay further down the road.
One of the things that I think we're beginning to see a couple of signs of, it's sort of, well, it's definitely in Liverpool's Gini Wijnaldum decision over the course of the summer. It's hinted at with the Henderson conversation that sort of emerged briefly yesterday and will continue for a period of time. But it's also best embodied by where Crystal Palace have ended up, is that I think that there's going to be more and more sides, right the way up and down the spectrum of where sides end up in a big five league, who are happier than ever to perhaps embrace the idea that players are leaving at the end of the contract. And that they're almost obliged to be happier than ever, because the idea of moving these players on just becomes so incredibly difficult. They have to just sort of accept the reality that they're in.
I think that this is the thing that sums up best how fractured the market's become and how detached from the rest of Europe the Premier League is. So to me, if you're in Italy, Spain, France or Germany, nothing's changed. If a player's within 12 months, 18 months at the end of the contract, you sell. You have to sell. You have to get that money in to reinvest in your squad. You can't really be thinking about letting players run down their contracts and leave on a free. It happens occasionally. Sometimes there's a really high value player, happened with Lewandowski at Dortmund. There's a really high value player who realizes the kind of their own worth, and the club takes the position that they're better off effectively keeping them until the end of the contract, not renewing, and losing them for free, which in certain circumstances I guess works, in others really doesn't, or it might be that they just cannot get the player to sign. So it does happen, but I think generally in the rest of Europe, the idea will be what it's always been, that you basically get to the sort of 24-month barrier and you make a call. You either renew or you sell. I think what's changed in England, this goes back to what you said at the start, is that there aren't the outlets anymore. So if you take Palace as an example, Palace had a load of pretty good Premier League players, like standard mid-table Premier League players, all of whom, most of whom were kind of late 20s, most of whom were on relatively big money. Not massive money for the Premier League particularly, but certainly bigger than they'd be able to get in Europe. Some of whom were British, some of whom weren't. I don't know whether it's deliberate or not, but the choice they were effectively presented with is do you re-sign these players, presumably at a slightly higher wage or at least not at a lower wage, and commit to paying them those several million pounds per year until well into their early 30s, or do you try and sell them? But they can't sell them because there's no one to sell them to. Because you either have to sell them to a direct rival, which most teams don't like doing, most of whom would probably have looked at someone like Joel Ward and thought, well, however much Joel Ward's on, I don't know, 70, 80 grand a week, is a lot of money for a 28, 29, 29-year-old right-back and versatile defender when we can go and pay a 23-year-old from France or Belgium or Holland 30 grand a week to do exactly the same job, and we might be able to sell him on a bit later on for even more money. So they couldn't sell those players within England. You can't sell them abroad because the sorts of teams they'd be interested that would be interested in them won't pay them their wages. They just cut, you know, that is, Joel Ward isn't going to sign for Borussia Mönchengladbach, who I don't want to pick on, or Stuttgart or Marseille at £70,000 a week because they cannot pay that money to someone who would be a decent right back for you. And look, this is not to criticise Joel Ward. I quite like Joel Ward as a player. I think he's quite good, but he and a lot of those players at Palace were testament to the inflated value of Premier League players that has basically separated the Premier League from the rest of the football, the sort of market ecosystem. There is nowhere to shift those players onto, so you are left with this choice of, well, what do we do? Do we sign them up again, or do we, and try and sell them? That probably wouldn't work. In fact, it'd make it harder, because you'd want more money for them. It'd make it even more difficult to get them out of the contract. Do you basically sign them up again just so you can sell them, with the risk that you can't sell them and then you're lumbered with their contracts? Or do you accept that at some point, even though it's not ideal to have, I think they lost 12 on to the end of the contract this summer, Palace, and at one point they had 11 or 12 players under contract and that was it. Do you accept that you just have to watch them all walk out of the door, and although you don't get any money for them, the way that your accounting works means that you effectively have free money coming into your accounts to break even? And I think Palace have made that decision. It may not work for them. It may be that the squad they put together isn't good enough, or is too young, or they can't get the numbers in that mean that they've got enough depth to get through the season. It might turn out that they've appointed someone who's not a particularly good manager. And they've appointed him because he's quite famous. But I don't know if they had a choice, because I don't think that for those mid-table teams in the Premier League, there are the outlets in the transfer market. And I think that also applies higher up. And it may explain why it's so difficult for the top six, plus Leicester, to shift squad players, because no one can afford their wages.
But on that, just to sort of extrapolate that point, so Everton, for instance, are looking at Andros Townsend. So it looks like Andros Townsend, who's left Palace on a free — I'll give you the full list of Palace players who've left, by the way, because it is great — James McCarthy, Wayne Hennessy, Nathaniel Klein, Gary Cahill, Scott Dann, Andros Townsend, Patrick Van Aanholt, Mamadou Sakho, and Connor Wickham, of the lads you may well know. Obviously, Batshuayi has also gone back to Chelsea at the end of his loan, and Sorloth went to Leipzig. Max Meyer left last season as well, over the course of the campaign. But Andros Townsend's a really good example now of, in the past, I mean, Everton have spent £40 million on Alex Iwobi, and they're rightly not going to do that again. So they end up with Andros Townsend, whose ceiling may not be as high as Alex Iwobi's, but in terms of sort of week in, week out average performance, they're very, very close together, I would argue, those two. So you end up in a situation where, in the past, for instance, Arsenal have been able to effectively diddle Everton out of £40 million. They did the same thing with Walcott. But now Everton can say, well, you know what, we'll take a bit of a gamble, it looks like, on Damari Gray. We get our proper place in the food chain, in that we're going to possibly spend big money on Dwight McNeil from Burnley. Burnley to Everton is a step up for McNeil. It's a new challenge for him. But the flip side of that is, if we need another body, what we're not going to end up doing is doing a favour to one of these clubs above us who want to get rid of somebody. What we're going to do instead is, we can look at X is now available on a free transfer. So that way they're not solving anybody else's money issues, which I would argue Everton have been quite guilty of in the past.
But you're also freeing up a slot. So, I mean, I think I don't know how much you'd get for Alex Iwobi in the transfer market, or even Theo Walcott. Walcott's gone, hasn't he? Went to Southampton.
Southampton now, yeah.
I don't know how much you get for Alex Iwobi in the transfer market, but it's feasible, I guess, that someone might pay you 10, 15, 20 million quid for him. I'm slightly surprised, to be honest, that Liverpool have been able to get what looks like about 17 million quid for Marco Grujic and Taiwo Awoniyi, neither of whom I would have thought would retain anything like that value, but they have been able to persuade Porto and Union Berlin to give them a decent amount of resale for those two. Looks like they'll sell Harry Wilson as well, probably to a Championship team, in the next few days. That would then be another, you know, 8, 9, 10 million quid, which isn't as much as Liverpool wanted, but it's far more than really they should be entitled to in this market. So it's in that world, it's not impossible that maybe a newly promoted club, or a Newcastle, or, you know, someone a little bit further down the food chain than Everton, goes and says, right, do you know what, Alex Iwobi, 15 million quid is pretty good, pretty,
but
pretty good business.
They'll have to pay his wages.
They'll have to pay his wages, which is a problem. Or then, or Everton might find that they are still, Everton might find that they either have to settle up a little bit of Iwobi's contract, or that they are still effectively on the hook for a portion of Iwobi's wages just to get him out the door. Equally, though, you know, saving 70% or whatever of however much Alex Iwobi earns, which will be up towards 100 grand, I would have thought, that's no bad thing. But it also means you can book that money in, and the player that you've replaced him with was free. So there is a common sense, even if Townsend is a little bit worse than Alex Iwobi, to be honest, I'd say he's slightly better. Age-wise, he's a bit worse, he's a bit older. You are basically getting free money, which means you can sell Iwobi or Bernard or whoever and free up a bit of money to spend in the areas that you need it. Everton have got a big inflated squad, a load of players that have no resale value because they're too old and they're on massive money. Iwobi, Walcott previously, Fabian Delph, you know, there's a lot of players in that Everton squad who you would be looking to sell. Bernard, they need to start getting rid of those players. It may well be that they're looking at it thinking, well, look, we have to either take what we can get this summer, or they're all out of contract next summer, so we have to let them walk. So what Palace are going through now may well be what Everton go through next summer, and that may be what you need to reset. And to be honest, as much as I kind of admire Palace for doing it, and as much as it is a, there is an element of, is it the 76ers that did the tanking thing in the States, in the NBA? You trust the process, which was where they deliberately lost games so that they could get higher draft picks. You wonder whether, to an extent, this is football's equivalent of that, that you run down the contracts of everybody, you clear the debts, and you start again. There is a boldness to that, and a bravery to it, and there is definitely like a coherent logical argument behind it. But ultimately, it's proof of bad management and bad squad planning for several years that you ever get into that position.
And it then has knock-on effect on what everybody else is doing. Because you've got a bank of football. So, for instance, does anybody necessarily in the Premier League, well, Crystal Palace certainly don't, simultaneously want a squad with Townsend, Van Aanholt, Sacco, etc., etc.? No, but a lot of people might think, well, you know what? I could use a Townsend, or we could use a Van Aanholt for a couple of years, and then he comes in from there. But what that means is that, for instance, you're now not buying Jadon Shaqiri.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a problem further up with the fact that all, and this goes right from someone like Shaqiri, who'll cost, you know, probably cost someone, what, 10, 12, 15 million quid, not a huge amount of money, right up to Man City trying to find someone to take Riyad Mahrez off their hands, or whoever, so that they can sign Jack Grealish, that you are basically functioning in a market where there's far less liquidity, where teams have to be much more sensible with their bid purchases than they perhaps used to be. There's going to be much less appetite for risk. There's far fewer teams who can do anything, because ultimately you're looking basically a handful of teams on the continent, and Premier League teams who are kind of better run and much more conscious of things like the sort of age demographics of their squad. You might get lucky, and it might be that Lazio, in the case of Shaqiri, have got one sizable signing in them, and they might really like him. And to be honest, that has classic transfer deal written all over it. Jordan Shaqiri to Lazio just fits beautifully.
Felipe Anderson's gone there for $3.5 million.
Exactly.
In the last few days. And so they all of a sudden, they might be able to do Felipe Anderson and Shaqiri, but my God, it does not feel like you're buying the same thing twice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a link with Felipe Anderson, obviously. He had a great time there, so they might have done that one for romance. It wouldn't, to be honest, to me, it wouldn't suggest that that's particularly intelligent squad planning either for Lazio, that they go and sign Felipe Anderson and Shaqiri. You might get lucky. It might be that, I don't know, if you're Man City, that you might run into that, you know, Gabriel Jesus might be the exact player that Juventus want and need, so they might be prepared to do that for you. But I think all of those clubs have got a problem that they will need in some way to offset their spending by selling players, and selling players is going to be really hard, particularly for the English teams, because as you've said, the big foreign clubs won't come and help them out because they don't have the money to do it. The smaller English teams, I think, are much more conscious of needing to find players with resale value, or they're thinking that if you look across Europe, there is a massive bargain market now, whether it's from teams releasing players on a free, whether it's from teams desperate to sell players as they can't afford their wages anymore, or whether it's from France, where everybody is for sale, everyone's for sale all the time in France anyway, but particularly this summer, everyone is for sale at a knockdown price. Hossam Awar is apparently like 25 million euros. That's who I would be looking at if I was any of those clubs looking for a bit of creativity in midfield. That makes it much less attractive to go and sign Divock Origi, to go and sign someone from Man United who's on Man United money, but is, and previously would have been, well, we've signed this player who played 15 games for Man United last season, that isn't that good. But now it's a bit like, well, hang on, we don't need to go and sign the 27-year-old Man United cast-off, because we can get this 21-year-old from France who is going to cost us £6 million and is basically the same player anyway. And I think it will be really interesting to see this summer, in the short term, how the big clubs balance their books to some extent, because they all want to and they all need to. And going forward, it'll be really interesting to see how the market changes, because I don't see that it can be sensible anymore to have lots of players who are kind of on bid money and 27, 28, 29, when you know that ultimately your choice is going to be either to sell them before you want to at a knockdown price, or let them run their contract out and go for free.
Thank you very much to Rory. We'll be doing more of these as the season wears on. This one, obviously, on the transfers, might be the same in August as well. We didn't even get into the fact that it's absolutely berserk. Liverpool are playing two games of 30 minutes this evening. But that's all the fun of pre-season. Thank you to Rory. It's been Midnight Caller. I've been Gary Cole.